VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And we are here, as usual, on this very glorious, sunny Saturday morning with a little chill in the air. But, wow, I love living in a climate where the sun shines.
Well, it's a lot easier to enjoy it after a week like this.
It certainly is. Even with the fluctuation in temperatures, it's kind of such a relief. Took the dog out a couple nights ago. It was about 75. Took her out again about 7 hours later. It was about 42.
Yeah, it was a big drop overnight, too. This morning was really chilly.
Yeah, but not unpleasant.
No. So
from 40-odd years of experience in, shall we say, other climates, it never gets old down here. Well, there's a lot to talk about, but at first I'd like to welcome everybody, all the regulars. Welcome back. Stick around for the hour if you can. Of course, you're the reason that we're here. If you're new to the show, either accidentally or on purpose, see if you can stick around. We promise you you'll learn something. Whether or not it actually applies to you is irrelevant. You can't know enough about anything. You know, I always tell people that to do a job like ours, you have to know a lot about a little and a little about a lot. So whatever the topic is, we are happy to converse in it, and we will do that should you want to bring it up. And you do that by picking up the phone and dialing 904-222-8255 or 222-TALK. Callers will be put at the head of the line. We will have a trivia question as usual right after the first break, and it's about younger people today. And as always, I do have a point. And we will get to it by the end of the show or sooner if somebody actually gets it right. Meanwhile, if you're listening, when Howard Vergalis signed off, he mentioned that we were here and we had a couple of thumbs up for the week. And there is good reason for that. It was a doozy.
It really was. It was fun.
And by the way, I can now answer that question. Do you think that the corona flu virus will cause a market correction? Well, no, I don't.
We actually did answer it, and we said did. No.
I've never seen two people less confident in our answers.
It's true. I didn't feel a lot of confidence, but
it was logical.
It was, but you just never know with these things. It's so far out of our control or most people's control that it could have gotten bad, but it really has gone the other way, despite the numbers are big. They're a little bit staggering with over 30,000 infected.
That we know of.
But you're right. But the mortality rate has stayed around that 2%. And while that's terrible, it's for an outbreak like this, it really isn't that bad. In fact, there are 10,000 people that die of the flu every year in the U.S., I believe. So that is, we're not even at that level. Yeah. And so it's just not as bad as it could have been.
What's the opposite of mass hysteria? I'm not sure, but that's kind of what this turned into, was the opposite. It could easily have led to mass hysteria, which I would argue that the bird flu did. But we've learned to deal with these things better. And I do think the administration has been out front a little more on this one than they have in the past.
Are you talking about the Chinese or the U.S. administration?
U.S. much more than the Chinese.
Yeah, the Chinese kind of let that
go. They dragged their feet for many months.
In fact, I was going to talk about this later, but some of the sad news this week was that the Chinese doctor who sounded the initial alarm on it and wasn't taken seriously by Chinese officials, but he actually passed away from coronavirus this week. So that's kind of sad. He should have been hailed as a hero, but instead,
not there.
He was just brushed aside and they didn't listen. Yep. So. Anyways, that was a bit of sad news for the week, but the rest of the news was actually really good. We saw a 1% pullback on Friday, and that was actually due to coronavirus fears, people, and some profit taking from the big week that we had. I think people were a little bit nervous holding equities over the weekend, And so we lost about between half and 1% on Friday.
What did that wise man once say? Anything that's unsustainable will stop. The degree of the rise we had Monday through Thursday is unsustainable. You can't do it very long, so it will stop, and then it'll pause and look back and then kick in again when it's ready. But meanwhile, we set some records.
Yeah, we still gained 3 to 4% this week, despite the 1% pullback on Friday. So that's pretty incredible. We did set new highs on all, I believe, on all three indexes, several new highs on the NASDAQ. The economic data was good to great in most cases. The Fed, basically,
that was a rare smattering. It has not been running that way. The economic data have been mostly either dead even or leaning toward the negative side. It was really positive, and when you look underneath that and see the ones that were called misses, it's extremely positive.
Yeah, for sure. The Fed is not going to kill us with any rate hikes anytime soon. And the coronavirus growth actually could have gone on sort of a parabolic rise, and it really hasn't. It's kind of tapered off. In fact, the numbers are increasing at a slower rate than they were, where at this point in the curve, you would, if it was going to be a huge deal, you would see them increasing at an increasing rate, if that makes sense. So, and then President Trump had a great week as well. He got acquitted on the impeachment charges. He also, by people that follow these things, say that he crushed his State of the Union address.
I follow them, and I agree.
And all of that is showing in his approval rating, which is at an all-time high. So he really had a good week. The Democrats, on the other hand, did not have a great week. The Iowa caucus debacle.
Ain't over yet.
Yeah, it's still, we don't know who won. It looks like Sanders and I'm sure I'm going to say this wrong, but Buttigieg.
Just say Mayor Pete.
Yeah, Mayor Pete. There you go. We're neck and neck.
He's on that case. He wants you to call him Mayor Pete because it sounds so nice, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Like your small town friend, the guy you know.
It's not what I call him, but I can't say what I call him on the radio, but that's another story.
So they're neck and neck. It looks like Biden had a really bad week. He got crushed. Warren's basically out of it, so we're starting to see some favorites emerge now. Whether or not the Democratic Party will allow Sanders to be the favorite, I don't know.
Will someone please stick a fork in Joe Biden?
Yeah,
he's done.
He really is. He's done. So yeah, there was just a ton of news this week, and most of it was pretty good. So QQQ, that is the ETF that tracks the 100 best NASDAQ stocks, and it really had an incredible year last year. It returned just under 39% for the year. So one of the best performing indexes slash ETFs for 2019. So you might think that it would take a breather in 2020, but you would be wrong. So far this year, it's up 7.8%, and that leads most ETFs that I looked at. It's an index that's heavy in technology, so it was not surprising to see that technology leads all asset classes this week, gaining 4.6%. Materials were not far behind, gaining 4.3%. Healthcare was up 3.9%. And utilities were the only negative category this week, down about 0.5%.
And they've been run up so much, it was just ludicrous anyway.
They were rallying while everything else was falling in the last couple of weeks. And energy only gained 1%. So the energy's been the story of the last couple of years. Just can't get any traction, and doesn't appear to be happening now.
Yeah, the redheaded stepson or whatever asset classes lately. But that's a good thing. It means we're using it more efficiently. We're producing it in much more volume. We're not subject to the spikes that used to hit us because of our own independence. And all in all, that's actually very good news for people. It puts more money in your pocket. All right, we have to take a short break. We'll be right back. I've got several more comments on jobs and that kind of thing that we're going to want to wrap up. So don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And our lines are open, 904-222-8255. And you can use that number if you want to guess at a trivia question. Brought to you, as usual, by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. Call Ken at 904-636-7888. This one is about generations. How many millennials are going to turn 30 this year? To the nearest tenth of a million, I will take that.
It's funny because you think of the millennials as college kids.
Exactly.
For the most part. But in reality, the millennial generation started somewhere around 1980.
And this has some major implications for several industries, for investors, and lots of other things. So that's why the I see the phone ringing already. I see the implications of this being pretty serious for everybody. And if you don't recognize what's happening out there and you're trying to do a job for yourself or sometimes for others, you're going to miss something. Good morning, Captain Dave.
Good morning, guys. How are you doing?
We are excellent. And you?
I'm pretty good. Considering the circumstances, I'm doing just fine.
Well, good. What's on your mind today?
Well, yeah, I'm going to talk a little bit about our favorite stock.
Oh, good. What's happening?
All right. Well, as you know, it went in a reverse split of 4-1. I got out of it completely.
This is a little biotech company, by the way, that Dave talks about.
It made us a lot of money. But anyway, now, it's, believe it or not, it's low at 16 cents, and its high is 32 cents.
Mm.
And it keeps going back and forth. So I have 1,000 shares. Bought 1,000 for $160. Sell 1,000 for $320.
In these days of trading free, it won't kill you.
Yeah, even a couple $100 a month. You
know? That's funny.
I'd love to. That is a case study in the stock market or something.
Isn't it?
How that stock, the story of that company, it's just amazing.
Yeah, so, well, actually, I got a piece I just started to write for next week, and I can use that as one of the classic examples. I'm not going to tell you the topic because I want you to tune in and listen.
Well, I always do.
How about that? Yeah,
that is amazing when you think of, you know, where it went, where it started at 99 cents, went up to $18,
yeah,
$22, whatever it was. Bad management, terrible things happened to it. I don't know what's happening with the Aspire study. I mean, that thing, the biological ladder thing they built does actually work.
Yeah, right? But, I know. Everything should be going well.
Study and mismanagement.
The problem is the broad market is so good that nobody cares about taking flyers right now. Just throw your money at the broad market and make a fortune. Of course, that'll change someday, but
it
business is good.
If anyone wants to know the name of the stock, just email me or call the office.
Yeah, we don't like to give out anything like that on here.
I don't know. It's a penny stock thing now.
Yeah.
We don't encourage trading in penny stocks. But if you want to know, we will tell you.
We do it like you do. You got a couple $100, throw it in there. What the heck?
Yeah, you know, and it's just because we've been in this thing. I mean, how far back, Steve? 10 years, 12 years?
Years and years. Yep,
and
you're so right, sir.
It always made me money, so now it makes me a couple $100 a month.
Hey, good enough. You want to take a shot at the trivia? How many millions, basically?
I don't even know. I don't know. I'm 78 years old. I have no idea.
Well, they're overtaking us. We'll put it that way. Thanks for the call.
Bye.
Yeah, one note about millennials. When you think about the population distribution by age of the U.S., it looks like a barbell. So you had the baby boomer generation, or your generation, and they call it that because there was a baby boom when the war was over. People got back, settled down, bought houses, had kids, and that is your generation. The generation below that is Gen X. That's my generation. We are tiny. So there just this little sandwiched generation in between these two huge generations, which are the boomers and the millennials. So we're the handle, the grip of the barbell. And then you guys are the millennials are the weights. So that always affects a lot of things, including Social Security and people paying
in. The fate of this country rests on the millennials. Now, I hope you're all sitting down when I said that. That could scare anybody who's paying attention. All right, I got one quick comment, too, before we get off to the jobs numbers. Do you remember, I'm speaking about the State of the Union speech. Do you remember when the term ripping a speech was sort of a journalistic thing? That was just my little rhetorical question of the week.
Yeah.
All right, jobs, more jobs, unpredicted jobs. Jobs are everywhere. Unbelievable to some people, but not to me.
No, I had a feeling this might happen, and yep. It was a really good month for jobs.
We got a heads up on Wednesday with ADP.
Yeah, actually, there was a few things that happened with jobs this week. First, initial jobless claims dropped back down to 202,000. That's not quite the lowest we've seen in the cycle, but it is close.
You can see it from there.
Yeah, definitely. And so that looks great. The continuing claims were slightly higher than the estimate, but still near historic lows. And then we had the ADP report come out on Wednesday, which almost doubled the estimate. The estimate was 157,000. The actual report came in at 291. And then on Friday, the big number everyone was waiting for, but we'll get to it right after this caller.
Suspense. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning. How are you?
Wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing great.
What do you want to talk about?
Yes, I'm trying to get some information as to a stock screen or a fee analysis screen that I could go to that when I purchase funds through Fidelity or such companies like that, that will tell me what the fees are that are associated besides just the, I mean, I know they charge a certain flat management fee, but they do not show on their website what the cost of the fees are that are involved with a particular fund that such as Fidelity would have for the customer.
Sure. There's several ways to get that, actually. What you want to look at really is the fund, if it's a mutual fund, the fund prospectus, and those are available on those websites. The number you should be most concerned with, unless you're trading in asset classes that have sales fees, but most people don't do that. Most people buy mutual funds that don't have sales loads on them.
Mm-hmm.
So just be careful. That's one thing to look for. Make sure that you are buying mutual funds without sales charges and what are the 12b1 fees and things like that. But what you really want to look at is the net expense ratio, and mm-hmm. that should be available in the prospectus. Or if you want to, you can go to Yahoo Finance or Google Finance or MarketWatch and just type in the ticker symbol, and that will be pretty clearly listed on any of those pages.
In the old days, they had to send you a prospectus in paper when you bought
Correct,
a fund
yeah.
for the first time. Not
right.
anymore. Now they're electronic online, but they still have the same information. But there's one piece of information that you will not find in the prospectus. It's in a separate document. I can't remember the name of the document, but it's more financial disclosures. And that is their annual brokerage cost. They are not required to print in the prospectus what their internal trading costs are, but they are mm-hmm. required to release it in another one. So if you see a number in a mutual fund called the turnover rate, and it's
yeah.
and it's high, you know that there's going to be some serious brokerage charges in there that are hidden from view because that part is not reported in what Adam was talking about, the net expense ratio.
Well, what I've tried to do is I've tried to find an article that will explain, without going into great detail, like all these companies like Fidelity that don't charge anything now for commissions, whatever, to buy and sell.
Right.
How do you find out exactly, or try to, what it's costing you per year or per quarter, whatever you want to call it, so that you have an idea what you're paying on top of any kind of management fee that you would pay them to handle an account. And I can't find that.
Most of the fees that are charged by the funds should be in that, except for the one that Steve was talking about, should be handled by that net expense ratio. And typically, unless it's a really expensive asset class to trade in, you want to see mm-hmm. that number at or below 1%. So that's my general rule. That's not a hard and fast rule. I look at it a little bit different than what other people do. I honestly mm-hmm. don't care what they charge to a degree, as long as they outperform their benchmark by a suitable amount. And mm-hmm. and their peers by a suitable amount. If a fund's returning 20% a year in an asset class that normally does 10 and its peers are returning between 5 and 15, if I can get 20% out of that fund, I'll pay 2%.
Absolutely.
It doesn't bother me. But if it's performing under those peers and under the benchmark, then I'm definitely not willing to pay 2%. So,
and if you're trading with a mutual fund directly, if you keep your account at the mutual fund family, then they probably don't compete with themselves internally, so you might have, let's just throw one out, maybe their balanced fund is more expensive than other people's. Well, it's right. your only choice if you're dealing with them.
Right.
And then I remember the old days with Fidelity. They used to keep track of the money that had already been subjected to a sales charge, and they'd put that in a separate bucket, and you could buy things that had sales charges without having to pay it. I don't think that was ever tracked that carefully.
All right. Can I ask you one other question?
But of course.
If I deal with somebody like Fidelity, do they have to buy only Fidelity funds, or can they buy like a Vanguard fund?
Vanguard's pretty closed up for their funds, but almost
no,
all of them
buy
are
it. You just yeah, might have pay. A $19 charge on it. Can we? Let's address this on the other side of the break.
Yeah, could we ask you to hold for a minute? Because this is a big topic.
Yeah, it is.
All right, we're going to finish that topic up after we pay a few bills, because it's that time, and then we'll see if he wants to guess trivia, too. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Vanley Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanley Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanley.
And I'm Adam Vanley.
And we are on the phone with Jim, who will be back in just a second after I remind everybody what our trivia question is today. The millennials are a large group of Americans, and a whole bunch of them are turning 30 this year. Kind of a scary thought if you're my age, but that's not the question. The question is, how many million to the nearest tenth of a million are going to turn 30 years old this year? And welcome back, Jim, and thanks for holding.
Sure, that's fine.
All right.
I was just, like I said, I'm trying to determine basically what it's costing me to buy a fund through a company like Fidelity, because everything I've always read has always said that cost basis are what's going to cost you over the years that you hold a particular fund or whatever it may be. And I just have not been able to understand, since they've done away with these commissions, how brokerage firms are making the money they're making keep them in business, basically. I mean, they got to be making it up without telling the American public how they're doing it, or, you know, what they keep in secret.
They get a management fee that's generally a percentage of the fund's net asset value. So that is not reported to you as performance during the time that you own the fund. It is an internal cost, just as any other would be, and that's how they make their money. Now, think about this. The market has gone from, let's go back not very far, from 10,000 up to almost 30,000. That means their funds are worth a lot more, and that means the same percentage of that is a heck of a lot more money. So what's happening is this market is allowing them to cut down the trading costs that we were all paying. And they do it because they want to be big and force some of the smaller players out. Charles Schwab quite literally, put TD Ameritrade in a tough position and then bought them. And I can only look at that and say, that's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
The management fee that you're referring to, is this in addition to what they're going to charge? You know, like, let's say, as an example, that you're charging 1 or 1.5%.
Well, are you talking about advisory fees or management fees for the fund?
I'm sorry, yes. They would charge you 1.5% advisory fees, and then it would be plus whatever, I guess what you're saying.
That's
is
additional.
The management fee per fund.
Yeah, that's correct.
That is absolutely correct.
But those go to different pockets.
Right.
So the management fee for the fund goes to the fund manager, and the portfolio managers on the account. Who work for Fidelity, who work for that fund or whatever fund it is that they're buying. The management fee goes to the people like us who manage what goes into your accounts. So different pockets, and they're not related.
Okay. And just out of curiosity, why is that kept quiet or secret or whatever, so that the ordinary consumer is not entitled to know that information?
They don't hide it.
No, it's publicly available.
They put it on their websites and on their prospectus and all that stuff. They don't want to bring it up. Then you're going to pay us X amount more if you own this fund. What they would rather report is, here's how my fund performed.
Yeah, they they do want to talk performance, not, well, when it's good, exactly. They want to talk performance.
Okay. Well,
when
yeah.
It's not good.
Well,
maybe not.
I have just looked on the Fidelity's website, and I have not been able to determine, which maybe I'm just overlooking it, where those funds are listed on a particular security that they're selling.
So I don't find mutual fund websites, company websites, particularly good.
They stink on ice.
Yeah. So I would say use I don't love Yahoo Finance, but it is one of the better sources out there. If you go to the Yahoo Finance homepage and type in, let's use Fidelity New Insights, FINSX. If you type that in, you'll see it come up in the search bar. And then if you scroll down just underneath the graph of the performance, you can find the expense ratio net. It's the third item down, and it says 0.79. And I can confirm we have software that we use that is for our industry, and I can confirm that it's 0.78. So they're within, you know, 0.1%.
But that's what you're paying for.
Yes.
For that fund manager, the person who's managing your portfolio, if it's other than you, if they charge you anything, that is a management fee, and that is totally different than a fund management fee, and separate.
Okay.
Cumulative.
I understand. Okay.
Okay. Good.
Very good. Thank you for your explanation. It's that's
anytime.
Great.
Do you want to take a shot at the trivia question? How many millennials have turned 30?
I have no idea. none whatsoever. Thank
you. It's a lot. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, thank you.
Good morning, Michael.
Oh, good morning. I enjoy your show so very much on Saturday mornings.
Thank you.
Thank you for saying that and meaning it, I hope.
I'm from Brooklyn. You don't say things you don't mean.
Good point.
I can hear it.
All right. Only because I'm a religious reader of Barron's, I find that a very informative paper. Mm-hmm. I believe there was an article about a month, maybe a month and a half ago, that was stating that millennials will be overtaking baby boomers. One reason is because of immigration. And that the other thing I remember from the article, well, two things, was that housing prices, for some reason, will go lower in the future. Somehow because of the increase in millennials. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
You know what, excuse me. You have to be careful using the term housing prices going lower. Are you familiar with the Case-Shiller Housing Index?
I am. I've seen him interviewed on TV many times.
Yeah.
That tracks a particular residence over a period of time.
A bunch of them.
Yes, a bunch of them. But they don't say, this is the median sale, this is the median price, the average, or anything like that. They track the actual change in value of specific real estate. So if you say that real estate is going down, it would imply that the Case-Shiller will go down, but it doesn't. It goes up. What they mean is millennials are not subscribing to the McMansion theory that our generation tended to produce. They're living in smaller places. They're looking more for lifestyle without the burdensome mortgages on them. So the average cost of a home is going down because the average size of the home is going down. That's why you got to be a little careful how you phrase these things. But yep, housing is rising. If you own a place, it's probably going up right now.
Yeah, but very likely, unless you're in certain
New York City,
parts of certain
markets. Not so much. Yeah. But Jacksonville, Florida, absolutely.
Well, that's good to know. Having a house, that's good to know.
Yeah.
As far as the trivia, if I recall correctly, I think there was a number out there that this year, somewhere between 4.7 and 4.75. So I'm going to say, not to be cute or anything, I'm going to say 4.73.
Well, you don't have to be cute. All that's important is that you're right.
Nice job.
The actual rounded number.
I don't own a cell phone. I'm just a book reader about how screwed up this country is.
Good memory.
I have a great memory. A great memory about what I read. Anything I've read, I've always tried to retain.
Obviously.
At least the most important parts.
Yeah, nice job.
Yeah, the upshot of this thing is over half of new mortgage originations in the year 2020 are slated to be with millennials, which means if you're in the real estate market, guess who your target ought to be.
You better be targeting them, yeah.
Yep. Or if you're in the financial services business or anything else, these people are actually growing up. They're actually taking responsibility. They're actually buying homes and creating families and all that. And by God, if they keep it up, we might just get Social Security through this eventually after all.
So, Michael.
Well, you know.
Oh, go ahead.
If I could just say, it seems that immigration has its good benefits and it has its negative benefits.
True.
I saw that my home state of New York, for some reason, is allowing illegals now to have driver licenses.
Yeah, I saw that.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And just lastly, how many of the immigrants coming in are like the ones that Donald Trump want, which already have the means to support themselves, as opposed to all the poor immigrants coming in that are going to have to go on some kind of social benefits?
If you find that answer, call us. Yeah. We'd appreciate it.
Please do.
I'm going to put you on hold, and Alan will get your address, and we'll send you a little something from Mr. Bales. Thanks for the call.
Thank you, and keep up the good work.
Thanks, Michael.
Well, that was fun.
Yeah, good call.
From memory, got this. This is a big deal if you're in certain businesses, and we got to pay attention to it. All right, we'll be right back. Got to pay some more bills, and this will be the last break. This is the Family Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And this segment's sponsored by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. You can give Troy a call at 662-9794. Our trivia question was won by a very alert reader. We're very happy about that. And in addition, we have Marshall on the phone. Good morning, Marshall.
Gentlemen, good morning.
How are you?
Great. Yeah, this was an awesome week.
It was.
It was. I agree.
And yet, I'm really concerned about the folks in China who have had this dirty economy thrown on them there. I heard one of the doctors commenting this week about the virus. Well, what did you expect? The place is a nasty place with a lot of people living on top of each other.
Stacked up, pigeonholed.
Kind of like the way people are living now in Los Angeles and San Francisco.
Yeah, and look what diseases they're bringing back.
But yesterday I heard something from Larry Kudlow. You remember when you're on the plane and they say, in the case of emergency, put the mask on yourself first and
exactly.
then help others?
Yep.
Okay? Well, we put the mask of an improved economy on first. Now, I am sure there's going to be a lot of unfortunate impact for China with all that's going on for them right now.
Why do you think they voluntarily reduced the tariffs on $75 billion worth of imports? Because they're hurting.
But think about, now, what impact is that going to have on North Korea? Because they depend on China for just about everything.
Great linkage. I hadn't thought of that.
And then Larry Kudlow brought this up. He says, all right, we prove to others in the world, and especially with Brexit, the value of realizing what capitalism is in a democracy. And then we're hosting the G7 countries
right.
coming here, and they're not doing so well.
No, they're not. I agree. You know what? There are some people who actually stayed up last night for 3 hours and watched a bunch of people that put socialism on parade, and it's getting to be a tough sell, isn't it?
Yeah, there was only one that raised her hand and said she was concerned about it, which kudos to her.
Yeah, if we haven't proven that our system is the best on earth yet, it's just because they're not paying attention, period.
Well, I enjoy Larry Kudlow because he says it at a language level that I could kind of understand.
Whereas
some of these other guys get a little carried away. I guess that was his TV background.
Well, yeah. He doesn't have an axe to grind either. That's a good thing.
No.
Yep, I appreciate it.
Gentlemen,
he is
one of the
keepers in the current White House.
Yes, sir.
All right, take care of yourself.
Yeah, thanks for listening, Marshall.
Good morning, Paul.
Did you hear the Democrat presidential debate last night?
I'll tell you what, Sarah and I recorded it because we were not going to sit there and just watch the whole darn thing. So well, we took a random spot and watched about 5 minutes. And once we were both done puking our guts out, we turned it over to something fun. That was about it. How about you?
You did not miss anything. I listened to it on the radio.
Okay.
And here is what I heard. Here are the three main points that I heard. One, we have to give away more free money. Two, we have to get the black vote. And three, America is a racist country from top to bottom. Those were the three main points that I derived from the debate last night. But here are the three things I did not hear. I did not hear anything about foreign affairs, domestic terrorism, and illegal aliens.
Huh.
Also, I did not hear anything about any further tax cuts. Instead, I heard them say they want to raise tax cuts right, so they can give away more free money.
Exactly. You can't give away anything else until you pay for the last trillion that you're spending now.
Yeah, it's true.
Every time those Democrat candidates talk, they make it that much easier for Trump to get reelected. Have a good day.
Thank you. I'll make one more comment on that. I heard somebody say this morning quite brilliantly on Fox that they all stood up there and told each other that their personal health plan was more expensive than everybody else's. And they were proud of that.
It's, yeah. I mean, this is not a political show, but when it affects your wallet, we have to talk about it.
Directly affects your wallet.
Yeah, it really does. And right now it affects it in a positive way because the guy in charge is doing things that benefit you. I just failed to see how any of the candidates on the other side would benefit us collectively.
It's absolutely incredible, isn't it? Okay, well, let's go on back to some actual news.
Let's talk about jobs.
That's a good idea.
Okay.
I have one. Do you?
Yeah, I do, and I enjoy it immensely.
We're among the many.
Yeah. The unemployment rate in this country actually ticked up last month, but that I want to tell you why that's a good thing. The reason that it went from 3.5 to 3.6% is that the labor force is growing. And why did that happen? People that have been discouraged for a long time voluntarily took themselves out of the workforce. This happened a lot in 2008, 2009. Around that time, the labor force shrank because people got so fed up of not being able to find a job that they just said, okay, I'm just not going to work. I'll be a stay-at-home dad or whatever that the case might be.
A little observation on that. It got so bad that it was starting to make the government look bad. So what do, as they so often do? They renamed it. They invented U3 instead
right.
of U6. U6 included all those discouraged workers. U3
just doesn't count.
Doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So
oh, well.
If you didn't look for work last month, you're not looking for work.
Right.
Yeah. U6, by the way, is now 6.9%, having spent most of the Obama administration in double digits. So you know.
So, yeah, that tick up was due to the labor force actually growing. A bunch of those people came back into the workforce and are starting to look for jobs.
574,000 people last month alone reentered the workforce.
Over 500,000 people.
Yep.
And that's why the number ticked up, and that's why it's a good thing. But they're actually getting absorbed by the workforce. So they're getting jobs. They're coming back in, and they're getting jobs. Not all of them got jobs.
And remember what we talk about so often, too, and we were talking about this in one of the early breaks. The retirements that are going on because my generation is getting old enough to retire, those are filled before new jobs are counted.
Right.
So you can't say, well, that's because so many of them are doing this. No, it's not. It's because the actual number of people working is growing so fast and paying taxes. Revenues are at an all-time high. We're still a trillion short because we spend so much. But the point is, as always happens, tax cuts work.
Yep. No doubt about it. And the other number that we saw out of that was that the average hourly earnings grew at a faster rate than expected, at 3.1% versus 3.0%. Now, the funny thing about wages is that all the data right now says that wages are not growing that fast. They're definitely growing, but they're not growing that fast.
Because it's a collective number.
But we deal with a lot of people on a daily basis and weekly, monthly, annually. We get a lot of people in our office, and we talk to all of them about what they're making. And this is completely anecdotal, but 5 years ago, people were making a lot less money than what they're making today. And it's across the board. It doesn't matter what profession they're in. The numbers, salary numbers that we are seeing today are substantially higher than they were 5 years ago, more than an annual 3.0% increase. And it, I think that the numbers are higher than what is being reported.
And small businesses are doing much better. You can't compare wages from W-2 people to small businesses very easily. So you're going to see a lot of that, too, where families have more wealth. And also, in a sort of very directly related way, the savings rate is jumping quickly.
Yeah, and that doesn't happen unless wages are rising even faster. We're Americans. If we get more money in our pocket, we spend it.
That's I would mention, if anybody out there started to look at any of these jobs numbers in the detail that we do, first off, you must be in the business, otherwise it'd bore you to tears. But the other part of that is January every year brings revisions to the population growth, and it did result in some numbers this month that are not directly from last month, but it didn't do it in a manner that inflated the results of this month. It actually was a bit negative toward that. So things are at least as good as what the government said, which was indicated on Wednesday by the ADP survey, which came in plus 291,000. And what they count is people on the payroll.
Mm-hmm.
You can compare ADP in January to ADP in December and do it very accurately. So that's when I knew on Wednesday that this was going to be a really good report on Friday. They're working. That's it. But if you have an axe to grind, you might put an article out like warm weather heats up hiring in January, but unemployment rises, because you got to make that little negative and see if you can make it stick with the public.
But it's false.
All right. Thanks to everybody who called in today. You were all very thoughtful, very good. I hope you keep it up. We always try to bring a challenge along with the good information. We'll be back next week, same time. This is the Ben Wee Financial Hour.